Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Muskies Matters with Lakeland University head football coach Colin Bruton. Muskies Matters is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Lakeland coach questions about the Muskies, football or sports in general, or just seek Coach Bruton's wisdom about life events that are going on out there. In this week's episode, the coach talks to us about his team performance against Rockford and what he's expecting against WLC this weekend. He shares his insights on frozen pizza. And the coach talks to us about Halloween. So let's get right to Muskies Matters. Well, let's welcome back Coach Bruton this week. Coach, do you have team updates for us?
It's fall break around here, so our guys are off from classes today and tomorrow. So that's a good break. I think it's a needed break. We were getting to that point in the semester where everything was starting to pile up with midterms and kind of now working towards the back part of the season where guys are sore and they're tired and they're physically beat up a little bit. It's good to give them a little bit of a break. And got another big game this week, going down to WLC, so we're looking forward to that one.
We start with the Rockford game from this last weekend. Your team led late into the second quarter, but Rockford just kind of caught fire. What were your thoughts on that contest?
Yeah, a lot of credit to Rockford. They played really hard, and they're a team that traditionally has struggled in the NAC. I think that in 10 years, I think I saw a stat, they've won 8 NAC games, and like I said last week, Coach Schrader there has done a great job and has really built that program up, and they flat out beat us. They were better. And that was disappointing on our end, but really a credit to them. They played harder, I thought. I thought they were more physical than we were. They executed better. I thought they scored right before the end of the half, and we were up 12-6. We missed a couple extra points, and they scored to go up 13-12, and I thought that was just huge. It gave them momentum going into the half, and I think a lot of times it's just kind of perspective. We went into the half in a one-point game and felt really down. We'd give up a score right before the end of the half, and they went in with a ton of energy, and they came out of the half with a ton of energy. And we turned it over a little bit in the second half or a lot in the second half, and that didn't help us. And defensively, we had we gave up a touchdown drive. We had a 3rd and 8, and ended up getting a touchdown drive the first series, the second series. We busted the coverage. We gave about a 60-yard touchdown pass, and just made a mistake in coverage. We're in man coverage, and we had a player switch. When we don't switch, and we cut a guy loose, which is never good, and they hit him, and all of a sudden it was 27-12, and I think our guys were kind of shocked. I think we expected to win that game, and they took it to us in the second half. So really disappointing result for us. I think you hope this is kind of rock bottom on the year and kind of rock bottom of the program, but you don't know. There's no guarantee that it's going to get better. We got to keep working and trying to get better. But a lot of credit has to go to Rockford. They flat out beat us. They beat us up. They were, like I said, more physical. They were tougher. They played harder. So credit to them as well.
When I hear you talking about the fact that the team kind of expected that they were going to roll in this game and then they take a loss, I wonder if there's, from a coaching standpoint, is there a really great lesson that you get your team takes away from that?
Yeah, I think we had a really good week of practice going in. I don't know if our guys expected to roll, but I think they expected to play better than we played. I think they thought we were going to be. That was a game that we felt very winnable. We were at home where we hadn't lost in that game in many years, and I think we felt pretty comfortable. And I don't know if it was overconfidence. I think the biggest thing is when we got hit in the mouth a little bit, if you want to use that cliche, we didn't really respond. I think it was more of that. We kind of got knocked backwards, and there wasn't a whole lot of fight after that point. And that's really what was disappointing. I thought we came out and played with energy. We didn't execute very well, but I thought we played with really good energy. I don't think it was a situation where we necessarily took Rockford lightly, but I didn't think we had a response when they took it to us a little bit. That was really what was disappointing. It's part of being a young team. It's part of being, quite honestly, an immature team. We got to do a better job as coaches of trying to get them, trying to get the group kind of re-energized or refocused when that happens. We didn't do a very good job of that.
You were having a lot of success throwing the ball in this game. Do you feel like your quarterback play is kind of maturing for you, especially after he was out with an injury for a couple weeks?
Yeah, Tez did some good things, and he did some things where we really see, areas where he can improve and get better. The hard part with our quarterback position is it's kind of been a turnstile for us. We've started 3 different players. They've all been injured. So we haven't, week to week, it's hard. Not even so much not playing, but just missing the practice reps. So, Tez played a little bit in the first two games kind of off the bench, and then started the third game and kind of won the job, and then, you know, played a little bit over half and got injured, and then he missed, you know, another 2 weeks of preparation. You know, this week he practiced but was pretty limited going into the Rockford game, so he was out there but wasn't taking a lot of team reps, wasn't taking a lot of live reps. And you can see the flashes. We can see he does some really good things. He threw some great balls on Saturday. He's obviously a tremendous athlete running, but it looked like he wasn't processing things quite as quickly as he needed to. And I think some of that is just he just needs more reps. He needs more time. You know, he's a guy that, you know, had his second start and has really played, you know, in six games, has probably played about, you know, eight full quarters of football. And that's not enough. You know, it's not enough, especially at that position. And we got to understand it's a process. It's been frustrating, though. I think our offense has suffered from, you know, just the lack of health at quarterback. You know, when you're playing all sorts of different guys, and you know, we've had some issues with just, like, false start penalties. And some of that is, you know, the cadence is just a little bit different with each guy. You know, one guy might be a little bit quicker with it, and we just haven't had that consistency that we need. So, you know, Taz is healthy. He's going to be, you know, back starting again Saturday and hopefully for the rest of the year. And we think we can build off this performance, but I think he has the ability to play a lot better as well.
You know, some people will look at 37 points given up and think that the defense really didn't have a good day, but I thought they played really well for you.
Yeah, we did some good things. You know, we went into the half and we'd only allowed 85 yards in the first half, and I think we had six sacks in the game. And, you know, the 37 points, you know, one of those possessions was a turnover that they took over at about the 5 yard line, and then we threw a pick six. So it's a little deceiving. I thought we played well with the exception of the third quarter. I thought the third quarter, like I said, we came out of the half, it was 13-12. We were kicking off to start the half, and we really needed a stop to kind of gain back momentum and field position and things like that, and we weren't able to do that. And then after, you know, our offense kind of sputtered, we gave up, like I said, the busted coverage. And, you know, the biggest thing for us defensively is we're young and we don't quite understand what it means to play 60 minutes yet, you know, with energy and with emotion. And, you know, we're not talented enough to go out there and not play really hard and not play with great emotion. And we do that in spurts, and there's spurts where we look really, really good. And there's other times where we're not playing with quite the same energy and focus, and we're not quite as good. And I thought that third quarter, we kind of let circumstances dictate how we played, and we started to kind of look around at each other and not point fingers, but it was kind of like everybody was looking for somebody else to make a play rather than saying, I'm going to be the guy that makes a play. So we've made some strides defensively, but we're not where we need to be.
Players of the game for you?
Yeah, I thought offensively, Christian Chapman, you know, a freshman receiver, is really growing. He's getting better every week, and caught a long touchdown pass and did some good things. And he's a guy that we got to try to get the ball to a little bit more because he's an explosive athlete and a guy that can really make some things happen. So I thought he played very well. Special team standpoint, you know, Paul Sacedo came in and punted for us, and I thought he did a nice job. You know, after his first punt was pretty poor. I think he had about a 15-yard punt to start it, and I pulled him over before the second punt and just said, Paul, you can't do any worse than the first one, so just relax and go out there and kick it. He did a nice job. You know, he's a kid that's, you know, starting cornerback for us, and is certainly not a punter, but, you know, Kyle, our punter, you know, broke his leg, unfortunately, in the game a couple weeks ago, so Paul's been kind of thrust into action, and I thought he did a nice job. And you know, defensively, I think Albert Jernet, another freshman playing safety for us, a guy that really is coming out. He's getting more comfortable. He plays really hard all the time, and that's what you love to see. He's a kid that has a great motor and plays really hard. He's going to be a really special player for us down the road here. But he's getting better and better every week. I thought he played well, and you know, we brought him a lot in the blitz package, and he got home on the first third down of the game for a sack, and was just kind of a disruptive force. He's a kid that plays a lot faster than he looks. You know, he's a guy that when you look at him, he's only about 5'7", 5'8", and doesn't run the fastest 40, but when you put him on the football field with Taz, he plays a lot faster, plays a lot bigger, plays a lot tougher. So I'm excited about the way he played.
Awesome. This week you take on WLC. What are your thoughts on the Warriors and keys for you in this contest?
Yeah, I mean, they're a team a lot like us. You know, they're kind of struggling. I think both teams are 1-5, and certainly not where either program expected to be this time of year. You know, we have a tremendous amount of respect for them. We've played them in some great games throughout the years, and you know, they're one of the teams that's beaten us in the conference kind of during our run. And in 2016, you know, they took it to us and put 50 points on the board, and you know, their quarterback Pat Mathias had a monster game that day, and probably a career game for him. I think he threw for about 260 and ran for another 200 plus and was awesome. He played outstanding. And offensively, he's kind of the guy that makes him go. He's a little bit like Aaron Nixon from CUW, where he runs around and makes plays with his feet. And sometimes he's best when things are breaking down, and he can kind of just improvise a little bit. But he's a really talented kid. He's been a multi-year starter, so he's comfortable. He's familiar with the offense. And then they got some really good receivers on the outside, I think, that have the ability to beat us deep. They're going to take some vertical shots. The other thing about their offense is it's based off a lot of motions. So there's some things that a lot of pre-snap motion with them, and that can cause some issues if you're not communicating, if you're not really sure on kind of what you're how we're attacking that motion. So that'll be a big challenge for us. Defensively, they're playing a lot more one high, playing a lot more man coverage, and that's a little different than what we normally see. It's a little more similar to what our defense does. But they have talent. They got some talented defensive linemen. I think they're strong at the defensive line position, and it's going to be a good test for us. I think both teams are probably looking at this game saying, hey, this is one we can get, one we can get ourselves back on track a little bit. So I expect them to play well.
You were talking about Pat Mathiasen, and how do you kind of prepare for him, especially when you have a lot of younger guys on defense?
Yeah, I think he's obviously the focus this week. We're making sure we know where he's at. He touched the ball every place. He better know where he's at. But just trying to contain him in the run game. I think he wants to run quarterback draw. They'll run some design quarterback run game for him. So just making sure we're very sound in how we're fitting the run game. And then in the pass game, we got to try to hit him as much as we can. When we get pressure. And try to take him off the spot a little bit and make him uncomfortable back there. We did a really good job against him last year. Like I said, 2 years ago, he certainly was the conference player of the week against us and had a monster week. So we know how dangerous he is and how good of a player he is. But he's the guy, like I said, that makes him go. When he's having success, they're really tough to beat.
Well, let's head to fan questions this week. We first of all start with Jimmy, who says, Coach B, I know the record is whack, but do you see the kind of progress you were looking for that gives you some hope for what we going to be? I hope I said that well.
That's good. I like it, Jimmy. The record is whack. We're certainly not happy with being 1-5, and it's not the expectations around here. And that's been hard. It's been a little bit of a little bit of humble pie we've been eating over here. We gotta just get back to work. I think we're seeing progress. We're seeing flashes of it. We're not seeing as consistently as I'd like to see, but we're certainly seeing guys that are taking steps and starting to make the jump. And I think on Friday we're going to start 8 or 9 freshmen, and that's it's not something we've done here in a long time, and that makes it tough. But at the same time, now these guys have played. Most of these guys have started 5, 6, 7 games now, and it's time for them to start. Not using that as an excuse anymore. At this point, they've had enough experience that we got to get better and continue to make strides. I think that's the hard part is, sometimes you can get wrapped up in results, and we are a results-driven business, and certainly, we're going to look at the results, and we want to win every game and things like that. But you also have to look a little deeper than that and know that we're building something, again, for the future. And I think we have a lot of talent on this team that just needs to play a little more consistently. And if we can do that, we're going to have success the rest of the year, but we also have a really bright future.
We have two questions from Gabe. The first one is, football is such an emotional sport, but I wonder if you believe that a line is being crossed when a player is knocking over water coolers on the sideline.
Yeah, it's a really fine line. We want our kids playing with emotion and playing with fire and playing with energy, and I think it depends where it's directed. I think sometimes a guy knocks over a water cooler. We haven't had that type of incident, but I'm okay with it if it's frustration and it happens one time and we can redirect that energy in the future. If it's a guy that's knocking over water coolers while he's swearing at a coach or pointing fingers at a teammate, that's obviously not something we're going to tolerate in any way. So I think it's just a fine line. It depends on the individual situation. There's times that guys come to the sidelines, they're frustrated with themselves, they're frustrated with what's going on, and that's okay. I think when you're frustrated that you're not getting the ball and you're making the scene, that's when I have an issue with it. When the selfishness or when the pointing finger starts, that's when it crosses a line that you can't have. But you want your kids playing with emotion. I think it's really hard to play this game if you're not playing that way, if you're not kind of right on that line. I want our guys playing with that positive emotion. When they make a big play, I want to see us celebrate, and I want to see our sideline into the game. I want to see guys fist pumping on the field and high five and all that kind of stuff. So it's close. It's just a fine line that you have to kind of feel out. It depends on the kid. Some kids are going to naturally play with more emotion, and you may allow them a little bit more rope, and Other kids just not their personality.
Gabe would also like to know if you have safe spaces and crying rooms for your players.
No, I don't know why we would have safe spaces or crying rooms. So the easy answer is no.
Henry says, can the Bears pull it out against the Patriots?
Yeah, I think they can. They're at home, which I think helps. I think the defense playing so poorly in Miami is going to be kind of a wake-up call. That Miami game was kind of the classic trap game for the Bears. You know, they were 3-1. They had the bye week, so they had 14 days. Everybody singing their praises and talking about how good they were going to be. And I watched that game because it was on. You know, the Packers are usually the local game here, but because they were playing on Monday night, we got a chance to watch the Bears, and I could tell about in the first 5 minutes that they weren't ready to play. You could tell they weren't tackling the way they normally tackle. They weren't just playing with really any energy, and that was, you know, I think kind of just a classic trap game. I think they thought they were going to go down to Miami and get a pretty easy win, especially with Tannehill out. And I think now you're going to see the opposite end of it, where they're going to be really motivated against New England. I think the one thing with Brady is if you can get him off his spot. And you can pressure him and you can collapse the pocket a little bit. That's when he struggles. He's really good when he's comfortable back there and he can get the ball out. And so I think they're going to have a chance if the pass rush really gets home. And I think it's going to be a pretty good game.
Next up is Drew, who says, do you think it says anything about the state of the NFL when the two best quarterbacks are guys that are over 40? I'm assuming he's talking about Drew Brees and Tom Brady.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, speaks to the fact that you can't hit those guys anymore. You know, the quarterbacks are so protected that, you know, you could be 40 and just stand back there and throw the ball. And, you know, those guys are so accurate, and I think accuracy with quarterback play is probably the most underrated. Everybody looks at arm strength, and arm strength's great, but there's not too many times you're throwing the ball 70 yards down the field. You know, the ball has to be accurate, and those teams do such a good job, I think, coaching as well, just getting the ball out quick and game planning for matchups. And, you know, both those teams use the running backs really well on, like, option route type things. So I think that helps them. I think in a different system, maybe they're not as effective. But I think the biggest thing it speaks to is that, you know, those quarterbacks can't be hit. You know, so not taking the pounding, and they probably haven't taken the pounding the last, you know, 6 to 8 years that quarterbacks in the past did. So I think you're going to see more of it. You know, it's almost like flag football for those guys. They're back there. They barely get touched, and when they are touched, it's going to be a flag. And you're starting to see defense players already adjust, and you're not seeing those big hits and all that on the quarterback. So those guys are, I don't think age matters quite as much anymore.
Larry would like to know, he says, my dad is a huge fan of gangster movies, never understood the attraction. What about you?
Yeah, you know, I'm not a huge fan. I will say Goodfellas is one of my favorite movies, so I'm a big fan of Goodfellas. I don't know. You know, beyond that, I'm not a huge, you know, not a Godfather fan. I haven't gotten into some of the other movies, but I am a huge Goodfellas fan. So I'm halfway there with you, Larry. But I'm going to say Goodfellas is one of the best. So if you haven't seen that one, I highly recommend. That's my movie recommendation of the week.
Ken says the best part of Halloween, no matter what anyone else says, is candy. I love Snickers bars. Is there anything better than that?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm a candy. So my kids, you know, Colton and Kanan know that they gotta, you know, they're pretty much got a tax. About 1/3 of their candy's going to me. So they gotta go out and whatever they go out and get on Halloween, they gotta get about 1/3 more than they normally would. So yeah, we'll make sure they get one more block in or one more street in to make sure they get enough. But Snickers are good. I'm a big fan of the Reese's peanut butter cups. I like them refrigerated. So that's kind of my trick. My wife likes them when they're kind of soft, so she doesn't eat them when they're refrigerated. So if I get them in the refrigerator, she's not going to eat as many. So that's the other strategy for us is, you know, I try to get my wife to buy more candy, you know, expecting a big crowd in our neighborhood. Our subdivision is somewhat isolated. So, while there's a lot of kids, we're not going to see a ton of foot traffic from people coming in the neighborhood. So I usually try to get her to buy a couple extra bags. We have extras. I think she knows that's a strategy, but she goes along with it anyway. So, you know, we'll get an extra bag of Reese's in there, an extra bag of Snickers. I like Twix bars, so we'll get some of those, and life will be good for a couple weeks.
Somewhere in the country, dads are at home taking notes on preparing for Halloween.
Yeah, absolutely. This is what it's about. You know, our kids, you know, the other thing I think you got to do is, you know, if you have multiple kids, you got to get all the candy in one big bag or one big container once you get home, so that the kids don't know, you know, they don't know exactly how many Snickers they have or how many, you know, Hershey bars, whatever it is, because then they're kind of counting and they know you took one. So you gotta get it all together, and it's a little bit more easier to steal a piece.
Now, how long did it take you to develop this strategy? I'm curious.
This is pretty quick. I mean, this was, since Colton's been trick-or-treating, probably at 3 or 4, he was really going out and trick-or-treating. And I remember him being young, and it's upper Midwest, it's cold on Halloween. So you're out there, and the kids are really excited, and after, about an hour, they're kind of ready to go home. And I remember telling him, we got to go one more block. And he's kind of looking at me like, I think I'm ready to, just go home and eat my candy. But we stuck it out, and, it's all about showing heart. You got to have a little toughness. You got to have a little heart, and, we got to make sure we get the right amount of candy.
Glad to see you're turning Halloween and trick-or-treating into a life lesson there.
Absolutely.
We have a few questions from Dan. The first one is, why do you think that things you want in life aren't necessarily the things that others want in life?
Dan's getting pretty philosophical here. I don't know if I'm ready to answer this one. But I think part of it, I think we all have different priorities. We all have different wants and needs. And I think... I think when you get down to it, we all want someone to love us. We want companionship. We want friendship. And then beyond that, I think when you're talking about material things, I think part of it is people just want different things. They have different interests. They have different wants. I'm not someone that, for instance, I have some friends that, when we graduated college, they all wanted to buy motorcycles. And I have no interest ever getting on a motorcycle, so I think some of it's just personal preference and things like that. But I think when you get down to it, when you really take away the material, because we all want, pretty much the same things. We want companionship and friendship and love, and we want to, have a passion or something we feel that gives us a purpose in our work and that kind of stuff. So I don't think there's that many differences.
Dan would also like to know, what is the most embarrassing thing you can remember doing?
Ooh.
We know there's maybe one or two at most.
Yeah, I don't get easily embarrassed. People who know me will probably say the way I dance is pretty embarrassing. It probably embarrasses them more than it embarrasses me. I think I'm pretty good, but I've been told I'm not quite as good as I think. So that might be it. I don't really remember doing a ton of real embarrassing things beyond that. Like I said, I'm not easily embarrassed, so I... It's hard one for me to answer.
Dan would also like to know, as a frozen pizza connoisseur, rate the top five pizzas.
Yeah, this is a great question. I was getting on Coach Lato, our offensive line coach, was talking. He's a single guy, so he's been going to Subway almost every night for dinner. The Subway's about a block from his apartment, so he goes to Subway every night. I was getting on him about, spending $12 on a foot long and chips and a drink every night. Why don't you go buy some pizzas or, actually go grocery shopping, because he's not a fan of grocery shopping. So he went out and bought some frozen pizzas, and he bought Orbs, which is about the cheapest frozen pizza you can get. I don't even know if it's a national brand, but they're about $1.99 a frozen pizza, and I was giving them some crap about it, because Orbs are pretty terrible frozen pizzas, and it's not something that we should be eating here as a college football club. We can do better than that. So I like the Jack's Rising Crust Pizza. We partake in that one a lot. We'll do a thin crust Jack's. I think Tombstone makes a decent frozen pizza. And then there's some kind of regional, pizzas. I like some of the Chicago pizza. Being from Chicago, if I can get a home run in frozen pizza, I like that. You can get Gino's East makes a frozen pizza. It's like a deep dish frozen pizza, which is outstanding. A little more expensive, but that's kind of a special occasion. Now, we have some kind of local ones here in Sheboygan. Faze Pizza, I got to give a plug to Faze. Faze is our Friday spot. We go to Faze every Friday as a coaching staff and get pizza, but they make a frozen pizza that's really, really good. And then Luigi's makes a frozen pizza. Again, it's a local spot here in Sheboygan County that's really good. So those are probably my top ones, but probably the ones we eat most often in the Bruton household, we eat some Jacks and that kind of stuff. So really, I'd say this. I'd say any frozen pizza is a good pizza. A day eating frozen pizza is better than eating, pretty much anything else. But I think we can, we can get rid of the Orbs, and we can do a little better than that.
Joe has a couple of questions for you, starting with, name five actors you don't understand why they became famous.
When I go back and watch some of the Adam Sandler movies, I don't get it. I don't see I don't know when the last time he made a good movie was, and I don't understand kind of what his popularity was. And I think there's a whole kind of group like that I don't really understand. If you watch the movie Grown Ups, if you've seen that movie, and it's an absolutely horrendous movie. But all the guys kind of in that movie, I think, it would be kind of the guys on my list. You know, the Rob Schneiders, the Kevin James, and I don't know so much if it's them being terrible actors or them just making terrible movies, but that would probably be my list. I think there's a group of movies from that mid-90s, you know, especially those comedies that just haven't stood the test of time. So that's probably the list. There's a lot of bad actors. I could, you know, I think Nicolas Cage is really bad. You know, I think in some respects Keanu Reeves is bad. There's some out there that just aren't very good, but I think if you find the right roles and you find the right script, you can become pretty good.
Well, you just got to find something that people will come out to see, even if you are bad, I guess.
Yeah, as long as the superhero movie, people will probably go watch it. But that's probably the key.
Joe then says, Kardashians, why do we care?
You know, Joe's saying, why do we care, which would imply that both he and I care, or he and us, and I don't. I couldn't tell you who I couldn't tell you who all the Kardashians are. I've never seen the show, so I don't know. I guess it's you know, who knows? But it's not something I care about. I can tell you that. There's a lot of things I care about. You know, I watch The Bachelor, The Bachelorette. You know, me and my wife watch that. We've watched, you know, one of my favorite shows is The Challenge on MTV with the old Real World people and stuff like that. So I watch a lot of terrible TV or reality TV that a lot of people would say is junk, but the Kardashians don't make my list.
This is my favorite question for you for the week. Linda would like to know, have you ever read a Cosmopolitan magazine? I'll find out personal stuff.
Sure. Yeah, I don't think I've read one certainly not from like cover to cover. You know, I never subscribe and get the monthly subscription or anything like that. But you know, you're in a line at the supermarket, or you're at a, you know, a doctor's office, and that's what they got. Or you know, I think you just glance at it. You know, I don't think I've ever. I've probably read the headlines more. You know, all those magazines are the same. You know, it's every month it just changes the same story. You know, it's health and beauty tips. It's, you know, weight loss techniques. It's you know, 10 techniques to make yourself more desirable and all that stuff. And it's just the same article that they change every week. But they got a loyal following, or at least they did. I don't know how many people still get magazines, but I think they've done a good job of kind of recreating themselves every week, every month.
Ben would like to know, what is your goal for how many followers you want on Twitter?
You know, I don't even know how many I have. I don't know if I really have a goal for that. So I don't know. I think I probably have maybe 500 or 1,000. I don't know, somewhere in that range. So that's a fine number for me. I would say that, you know, people should be following me on Twitter. I think we our staff does a good job putting out some good content. So if you're looking for to follow a lot of Division III football coaches, I think we should be at the top of the list. You know, our staff in general. If you want to follow the Kardashians instead, I get it. You know, they might put out more content that's exciting, but. You know, I don't really have a number for a goal, so it's a tough one for me to answer.
Sharon would like to know what you would do if you won the Mega Millions.
The short answer is nothing. Like I think there's these people that you know, they would need to be busy, or they would get bored. I'd be perfectly content, like, you know, living in my beach house and doing nothing on a day-to-day basis. You know, I think though, you know, if you win that type of money, I think you have an obligation to do something to help the greater good, you know. So I think for me and for Brenda, it would be finding something that we're passionate about and trying to, you know, whether it's starting our own foundation or starting a charity or giving back and trying to find organizations that we think are worthwhile and are doing, you know, doing things to help kind of the greater good. So I think that's the first thing. You know, I think I'd still want to coach in some capacity. You know, I don't know what that would look like, to be honest. I think for me, it'd be very hard to not be in the position I'm in, to not be a head coach and have that level of control and have that level of input and things like that. So I, you know, I think I'd want to still be coaching and still, you know, helping to impact kids. I still love the competition, and there's no amount of money that would change that. You know, just me being a competitor and wanting to compete in that. You know, the other half of that is there's some parts of the job more the office part of it, the logistical, the day-to-day stuff that I don't know how excited I'd be, you know, to do when I had $400 million in the bank. So that would be the part that would be hard for me. But I think I would want to, you know, I definitely would want to take some time or be able to travel more and vacation and like I said, hang out by the beach and see other parts of the world. But I'd want to help, you know, the greater good and try to find a way to give back, you know, a large portion of that money. And then I'd have to figure out, you know, if I wanted to still coach or what. But I would definitely eat, you know, higher-end frozen pizzas for sure. So that would be solid. And you know, I think we'd, you know, we'd have a lot of fun with it, I think, for sure.
And why is it good to be a Muskie?
You know, I say it every week, but we get a chance to compete on Saturday, and that should be exciting. If it's not exciting for you as a player, as a coach, and you're not doing this for the right reasons, then you shouldn't be doing it. You know, so I think getting a chance to go to WLC, like I said, we've played some great games with them in the past, and I know they're going to be ready to play, and you know, I hope and expect we're going to be ready to play. So that's going to be, you know, that's exciting. We get a chance to get better as a team. We get a chance to get better as a program and take a step forward. And you know, it'd be great to talk to you next week about a win and about all the progress we made that you know, we can actually see results for. So that's the goal. That's the expectation, and that excites me, and I hope it excites our guys.
Sounds great. Thanks for joining us this week, Coach.
We want to thank Coach Bruton for joining us on Muskies Matters this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Lakeland coach, please send them to us at ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsSupport.com. That's ColinBruton@MinorLeagueSportsSupport.com. Please have your questions to us by Tuesday evening so we can give the coach a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Panier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Muskies Matters.